Europe in my backyard.
L'Europa in casa nostra.
Europa in mi casa.
Un'inchiesta radiofonica sulla politica di coesione europea.
Radijsko poročanje o evropski kohezijski politiki.
Europe in my backyard.
Radio reporting.
Un'inchiesta.
Radio reportage.
Un espacio radiofonico sobre la politica europea de coesión.
Az európai kohéziós politika nyomában.
Radio reporting.
Radio reportage.
On European cohesion policy.
Über die europäische Kohäsionspolitik.
So, I'm lucky enough to be joined once again by the Green MEP for Dublin, Kieran Cuff. So, welcome back, Kieran.
Thank you. Lovely to be with you again.
So, this week, we're going to talk more about the greener side of cohesion policy and how important it is for energy efficiency. We're seeing a lot in the news about warmer homes. So, yeah, do you want to tell us a little bit about cohesion policy and, well, about the energy efficiency angle?
Yeah, well, if you look at Europe, you can see a huge amount of energy is being used at the moment. And a lot of that energy is used in homes, for example, or in buildings. I think 40% of the energy is used in buildings. 36% of the greenhouse gas emissions are coming from buildings. And we want to do something about that. We want to move away from the dirty fuels, the fossil fuels.
Yeah.
A lot of oil, a lot of fossil gas is being used in Europe. And we want to move away from that. And that has come into sharp relief with the war in the Ukraine. We realise that we're very heavily dependent on Russian coal, Russian oil and Russian gas. Mm. Less so in Ireland than in the middle of Europe. But when we look at the figures, we realise that most of the coal going into the big Money Point coal power station, the only big one left in Ireland, it was all coming from Russia.
Oh, right.
So we clearly want to move away from that and move towards renewable energy.
Yeah.
And for Ireland, a lot of that renewable energy is wind power coming from wind turbines. Ireland is almost uniquely windy compared to the rest of Europe. And it makes sense to harness that. I remember years ago, one of my colleagues saying, we need to be the wind Arabs of Europe. And would that it were that easy. But the bottom line is, most of the year, it's fairly windy. So building wind turbines, whether it be on land or out at sea, makes a huge amount of sense. That means that the electricity is becoming greener and greener.
Mm.
About 40% of it actually comes from the wind at the moment. And it looks as though that we can get that up to 70, if not 80%
wow.
by the end of the decade. So electricity is becoming greener by the year. You're using a lot less energy in your home. And we're changing the kind of heat that we use. So we're moving from coal and turf to, well, obviously oil and gas. But we want to move away even from gas, because while gas is cleaner than oil, it still has a huge amount of greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah.
So we want to move to electricity. That's a long distance to travel for the average household.
Mm.
But for new homes at the moment, most of them, 70% of them, have what's called a heat pump. What's a heat pump? It looks like a big box outside your house with a fan in it. Looks like a big expeller fan, the kind you'd see in your local takeaway.
Yeah.
But this box, it acts outside your house and it has a unit inside the house as well. It's a bit like a reverse fridge. In other words, it heats up the house, but at the back of this fridge-like thing, it's sending the cold to the outside.
Wow.
I'm explaining it really badly here. But the bottom line is, you need not very much electricity. You have a funny unit outside the house and a thing like a big fridge inside the house, and it basically saves you money on your fuel bills.
Mm.
So if you do what's called a deep retrofit with the insulation, the new windows and a heat pump, it will bring your heating costs down to a fraction of what they might currently be in your house. And so this move towards renovating homes, we call it the renovation wave in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And we are trying to basically double the renovation rate. Every year, about 1 or 2% of homes in Europe are renovated. We want to get that up to 2% or 3%. It means a lot more heat pumps, a lot more solar panels on your roof. And if we do it right, by the year 2050, it'll mean everybody will live in a cozy home.
Wow.
I love that word that the Danes use, hygge, and it means cozy. And you know, coffee shops are calling themselves a hygge coffee shop. But hygge to me is just this image of having a nice cup of hot chocolate, being warm as toast with your legs up on the couch, on the sofa. And that's what we want all homes to be like. And that means we need to spend a lot of money doing this.
Mm.
The good news is Europe is going to help us on this journey. Cohesion funds are helping. A lot of countries do this. They're helping with not just the actual physical infrastructure and insulation that we need, but also with the retraining of coal workers, of gas workers to provide these new types of technology. So instead of maybe installing gas boilers, you'll be installing heat pumps.
Yeah.
At the moment, a heat pump is expensive. Let me, you know, make no bones about it. But we want to get the cost of them down. Yeah. Just like the electric cars I was talking to you the other time, we can get the cost down and deliver this. And I think one of the big things we need to do is make sure that we start off with social housing, with council housing, with local authority housing and with voluntary housing.
Mm.
Because people living in these homes are at most risk of, in Europe we call it energy poverty, here in Ireland, fuel poverty. We don't really use air conditioning because we don't have too many heat waves in the summer. Whether that's unfortunate or fortunate, I'm not sure. But down around the Mediterranean, they're really worried about these long heat waves in the summer. So they need air conditioning and insulation to make sure their homes don't overheat in the summer. And then in the winter, they have the same problems of cold as we do. But here in Ireland, it's mostly to make sure people aren't suffering from energy poverty. That's why we have the fuel allowance. But over time, we want to be able to give people a warmer home. And you know what? We've done some great pilot projects here in Dublin, close to where I live in Stony Batter, St. Brickens Park. We took some of the old corporation flats, used to call it senior citizens housing. I'm not sure what the politically correct phrase is now, older persons housing.
Yeah.
But basically, we did a huge deep retrofit
and
we made the older persons housing into passive homes, which means that their fuel bills are nothing really. And the houses are really comfortable as toast, warm as toast in the winter. Fuel bills are down. It's good for the planet. It's good for the people who live there. And it creates good local well-paid jobs in doing the work on this.
Wow.
So if we can extend that, we're dealing with about 40% of the energy that we use. And it's certainly a win-win. So we need to insulate our homes.
Mm.
We need to use cohesion funds to deliver on kind of to align with the environmental goals. And that can be a real positive. Now, there's all kinds of other discussions you can have about data centres, about aviation, about all those other things that we use greenhouse gases for. But a lot of cohesion funds are going into trying to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions and give people opportunities in life. So if you go down to somewhere like Romania, yes, a lot of people in coal mining are going to be moving out of those jobs.
Mm.
But the new jobs that we'll give them, they could be in manufacturing heat pumps.
Yeah.
They could be in insulating houses. They could be in tourism projects.
Mm.
And we need to make sure that something similar happens in Ireland as well.
Yeah, I mean, you hear all these stories, don't you, that a lot of people are being forced to choose between putting food on the table and heating their homes in the winter. It's great to think that down the line that there could be solutions to these.
Well, you know,
problems.
And part of the ways that we will do that is using the money that we get from the carbon tax and giving that back to people. And 70% of that money is going into helping people on lower incomes. So it's going into direct funding of projects by local authorities. And it's going into, in some cases, 70% grants.
Mm.
Or if you're on a higher income, maybe a 50% grant. So that money you're paying, your carbon levy, but that money is going straight back into trying to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. So it's what you might call a virtuous circle.
Yeah. I mean, so what do you see for Ireland down the line, say, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years time? What would be your ideal scenario for us?
Well, I would like to see, obviously, a lot more investment in the clean energy. But it's not just about building the wind turbines and saying it's hunky-dory.
Yeah.
We also have to build the infrastructure.
Mm.
At the moment, we have interconnectors, electricity cables going into the north of Ireland, going across to England and Wales. But we need to expand that. More cables going to the UK. But also we're building a cable to France known as the Celtic Interconnector.
Wow.
And in a sense, that's a Faustian pact. We'll be exporting renewable energy for Ireland. But when the wind isn't blowing here, we'll be importing nuclear energy from France. That's a bit contentious, but on balance, it'll mean less nuclear energy is needed and more renewable energy will go into the grid. And I'm saying that we need more of these interconnectors. We need one down to Spain, maybe to Portugal, maybe to Belgium, maybe even to North Africa. This all sounds like pie in the sky science fiction. But actually the UK is looking at building a cable to Morocco so that they can bring in energy from sunshine for most of the year. So this big, we call it the European supergrid.
Yeah.
It is needed and it'll allow us to use a lot more renewable energy. So that's part of what the future of Ireland is about. But I often come back to something that it's something that my colleague Eamon Ryan said years ago. We're going to have to change everything. Change everything in energy, in transport, in construction and in agriculture.
Mm.
And this stuff won't be easy. I mean, I've got myself into hot water when I said we have to think about agriculture. Do we keep expanding and expanding the dairy herd until every river in Ireland is polluted and our greenhouse gas emissions go through the roof? We need to offer farmers alternatives. And there has to be well-paid alternatives to beef or dairy in Ireland. That means more horticulture, being able to grow our own crops, in some cases grow biofuel crops, make sure that we have we allow farmers to invest in renewable energy, in ecotourism. There's lots of different options out there. And we want to make sure that those options are financially viable for farming, because a lot of people in farming are fearful for their future. And we need to show them that there is a future that doesn't involve huge amount of greenhouse gas emissions. And I think there is one. I think the future is bright for Irish agriculture. I think there are all kinds of options out there, whether it be making biogas from emissions from cattle, whether it be tourism, whether it be all those other options that can give decent quality of life and decent jobs to rural Ireland. So that's agriculture. We've spoken a bit about the energy, moving to a lot of offshore wind energy. We're very well placed for that. Transport, you know, there's a lot of talk about electric cars, but I don't want to replace a million regular cars with a million electric cars.
No.
I want to have a decent bus service.
Yeah.
So the Bus Connects project is important in Dublin, so that the bus just becomes the natural option.
Yeah.
And it was great for me to be able to hop on the 27 to shoot up here from the middle of town. But we want that to be the easy option, not just whether you're in Coolock or in Stonybatter, but anywhere in Greater Dublin. So more public transport. And it's not just buses, it's the Dart, it's the Lewis, and even building the underground, which is a pretty expensive project, but it'll help get a lot of people, give them an alternative to the car. And then, of course, active travel. But I spend my life talking about cycling and walking. Maybe the poor relation is walking. And it makes sense, obviously, to have segregated cycle lanes so we can let our kids cycle to school without being fearful about them weaving in between the cars. But walking, I think, is, in a sense, it's the secret weapon in the transport armory.
Yeah.
And I think wider footpaths make sense. More pedestrian crossings, more zebra crossings. I love zebra crossings because you just look at the car and they stop and you walk across, as opposed to this kind of beg button where you kind of say, please, can I cross the road, and wait 30 seconds. I mean, imagine if cars had to stop and roll down the windscreen and press a button every time they wanted to get through a traffic light. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
So pedestrians should really be at the top of the transport pyramid and making it easier for them. 30 kilometre speed limits, but even 20 kilometre and 10 kilometre beside playgrounds, so that children feel safe. And that, to me, is really a sustainable city, is where you can let go the hand of your child and let them walk through the city. So that is a big project in transport.
Yeah.
Electrifying transport, modal shift of moving people out of cars into public transport, cleaner transport where there's no pollution, and a beautiful public realm. This is one of those new phrases everybody's using, the public realm. It used to be like footpaths and cycle lanes.
Yeah.
Now we talk about public realm. It's about planting trees. It's about sustainable drainage. So if there's heavy rain, it doesn't flood. So porous surfaces.
Mm.
But that can mean a really lovely environment around where you live or work. It can mean a bench where you can sit down and have a rest. It can mean somewhere where you can maybe have a cup of tea and watch your kids in a playground. It's about transforming the kind of city which was built around the car and making it more built around people and children and older people. Transport, energy, agriculture, eating a bit less meat, looking at organic food, less fertilizer is required. There can be a real win-win on all of this. So I think it'll be less air pollution, less noise pollution, more attractive places to live and work from, maybe a bit less commuting by car. I mean, we've all got used over the last 2 years of looking at a Zoom screen, which is great, but you don't want to spend your life looking at a computer screen. I mean, you and I know after 2 or 3 hours of staring at a screen, you actually crave human contact again. But maybe it's 1 day a week or 2 days a week for white collar workers. And I know I'm focusing on white collar workers because an awful lot of people have to go to work every morning. If you're driving a truck or if you're ploughing a field, you can't do it from Zoom. But there will be, I think, a lot more greener alternatives out there. We just need to push hard, I think, both in Ireland and in Europe to make that easier to deliver.
Well, thank you so much for coming back in again to talk to me today, Ciarán. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Pleasure was mine.
So, today I'm lucky enough to be joined by the project manager of the brand new Dodda Greenway, Ronan Carroll. So, hey Ronan, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me, Paula.
So, people have probably heard about the Dodda Greenway, but might not necessarily know too much about it. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of the project?
Yes, it's a greenway, obviously, and it goes from the Glenismore Valley up in Kiltipper and the Dublin Mountains, and it follows down through, say, Dublin County Council, into Talla, down through Knockline, Fairhouse, Temple Oak, areas like that. And it then crosses into Dublin City Council around Ely's Arch in Rathfarnham area. And from there, it goes on into the city centre and comes out of Sir John Rogerson's Quay. So there's different stages of the project. So in the South Dublin side, where we got or gained planning in 2017. So it was voted through council in 2017. So at the minute, because it's quite a complex project, we have split it into phases. So we're on currently we're about to go to contract on phase four. So we've completed the first three phases. And then from there, Dublin City Council are about to go for planning on their section. I think they have an emerging preferred route. So once we're finished our section, then it'll be taken by Dublin City Council then on into the city centre. So eventually you'll get people from the Dublin Mountains to the city centre.
That's crazy. So I think you were saying you've had a soft opening on it already?
Yeah, the bridges phase. So the first phase was Kiltipper Park, and we've had a small section in Kiltipper Park completed. And the next phase that we opened up was the bridges. There's three bridges that are going in. There's one up in Fairhouse Knockline. There's one down in Temple Oak at the back of Temple Oak Village that brings you over the river into the Dodder Greenway. And there's one then that brings you from Springfield Avenue into Bushy Park, which links up the Ratdown area of Temple Oak and Terranure down onto the Greenway.
Yeah, nice. Massive project, really, when you think about it. So what's been the council's role in the project?
Well, South Dublin County Council, our role has been to manage a project. So in my previous life, I would have been a structural engineer and civil engineer. So my background is that I did an ordinary degree in Bolton Street in structural, and then I went on and did a civil degree, an honour civil degree. So I'd have a good handle on both disciplines. And what I always thought, one of my first projects was to do a greenway in Castlebar on the private sector. So I was working for a consultancy at the time. And I always thought, who has the more important role? Is it the person that designs the bridge, the structural engineer, or is it the architect, or is it the landscape designer, or is it the person that goes and gets the money? I came to a stark conclusion that without the money, you haven't got a project. And the role of the council is multi-purposed. We would first off do the feasibility studies to see, do you have a project in the first place? Mm. What's the benefits to the public? It's not just cost or monetary, it's active travel. Can we get communities linked? Can we get communities out on their bikes, on their scooters, on their skateboards, on their e-bikes, whatever it is? And also then, is there any tourism parts that we can bring? So it's multi-phase in what the council is trying to bring. So we try to, first off, do we have a project? Then can we get planning for the project, which is a body of work in itself? And then can we get somebody to pay for it? And you need to tick a lot of boxes to secure the funding. So I've since come to the conclusion that, you know, the person that gets the money is probably the most valuable, because of all the disciplines, the engineering, the ecologists, and they're not there. They don't have a job. We don't have a project without the funding.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. It's funded, part funded by the ERDF. So, I mean, as you're saying, the funding is kind of at the core of this thing. Could the project have happened without the funding?
No, absolutely not. No. We wouldn't have had, we would have nothing. We'd have a really good idea is all we'd have if we didn't have the money. And the ERDF have been brilliant, and it's European money. So the ERDF have come in, and the idea behind the parts that the ERDF have funded is to link communities to the Dodder Greenway. So the Dodder Greenway is going to be on one side of the river or the other. So it's what happens if you're in a community that's on the other side of the river and there's no bridges. So you're literally severed. You've no connection to the Greenway, and it's a fantastic amenity, a fantastic facility. So the ERDF funding allowed us to build the pedestrian bridges to get people from different communities on the other side down onto the Greenway.
Yeah, I mean, it's connecting people. I mean, what can be better than that? Making it easier for people to get something as simple as getting to the side of a river.
Yeah.
So there must have been a massive team alongside yourself for this project. I mean, how many people are we talking roughly?
So from the South Dublin County Council side, I'd say I'm maybe the third project manager. It's been in inception since 2012.
Oh, wow.
So there was a manager maybe from 2012, 2015, and then somebody took it from 2015 up to 2018. And then when all the hard work was done, then I came in and put the shovel in the ground and started to manage the actual construction of it. So there would have been a lot of consultations with the public. It's when it comes to planning for a council to gain planning, we are the authority which grants planning. So we're applying ourselves and then we're granting it ourselves. So there's a large amount of consultation that goes on. So we would put the drawings in libraries. We would go out and meet community groups. We'd make sure that there's as much awareness as possible on the project so that people who want to say something and tell us something can, and they have a forum where they can make a submission.
Mm. I mean, do you know anything about the applying for funding? I mean, you know, we've talked to other people before that applying for funding is... it's a bit hit and miss. Do you know what I mean? Out of, say, 100 people that apply, you might only get like a small percentage that have got this money. So, I mean, it's been an amazing achievement from yourselves to getting this funding.
Yeah, like you think you've got a good project, but the funders may not necessarily think you've got a good project. But we put in our proposal and we put it forward to the RDF, and it's the Southern Regional Assembly were the ones who assessed it. And they agreed that we had a good project, thankfully, and agreed to fund it.
Yeah, so I mean, how long did you have to wait from putting in the proposal to finding out you had the green light?
I wasn't involved in that process.
Yeah, okay.
I think it was a couple of months. It wasn't too lengthy. And then once they granted the project, there was a couple of different issues with the project from an ecology perspective that we wanted to tidy up through different reports and monitoring. And then, so it was slightly pushed out. So we applied for the funding to be extended, and that was no issue. So once the funding was agreed, we found the Southern Region Assembly to be brilliant. They've been very, very workable and really helped us along the way. Different issues that we were developing, which are all normal in a project of this size.
Yeah. I mean, what do you see as the future for the Dodder Greenway? I mean, this is your baby. Do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, what do you see it being in its teen, moody teen years?
Well, what started to happen is when you look at, so it's very kind of theoretical at the start, and you look at your options report, and you're not just looking at the cost, you're looking at the benefit to business and the benefit to the community to get people out starting with their active travel, whether it's on whatever different mode. But what we hope to happen is that we will see those things come to fruition. So the likes of, say, cafes and bike shops and all these different businesses that are around the odd pub, all these different businesses that are around the Greenway, that they will start to see a massive benefit in the increased footfall and the increased people that we bring to the area through the Greenway, whether it's the experienced cyclists looking to go from the Dublin Mountains down to Dublin City, or whether it's the cyclists just looking to use the park. So what we've already seen happen in Dodder Valley Park, for example, is that there are some play spaces now that are planned so that if you go down, you can do maybe a kilometre stretch or a 2 kilometre stretch. And in that 2 kilometre stretch, you might have 2 play spaces or 3 play spaces even. So it would be great then for people can bring their kids and they can stop and play and then move on to the next playground and stop and play. And on the way, then you can maybe grab a coffee or support the local businesses. So that's what we're also hoping that people will make shorter trips to the shops on their bikes and not in their cars.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking earlier about how this is going to benefit everyone from, you know, from toddlers to your grannies and your granddads, and even building relationships, people spending more time with families on these walks.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's also the accessibility issue. So we're looking for it to be usable by all users. For example, there's a couple of different the guys that I work with, the teams in South Dublin County Council. We would have a number of wheelchair users, and they are massively there's a massive positive feedback from them on greenways like this, because it's changing how they can access the parks and how they can access the greenway. It makes it accessible for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is something that you may not think about if you're not a wheelchair user, but if you're a wheelchair user and you're excluded from using an area, it's quite tough to take that.
Mm.
And you can understand why. Like, so now it's accessible to all users.
Yeah.
And of all abilities.
Mm.
Which is very
positive. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I suppose, you know, when you look around town, like being in a wheelchair must be, you know, awful if you're trying to navigate a city. But at least if you've got these lovely spaces, you know, you've got all these lovely landscapes to look at, and you can just kind of go out and, you know, benefit from these fantastic new paths.
And amenity for all.
Yeah. You're saying also there's these new businesses starting up from now the Greenway's set up. There's a new cafe.
Yeah. The Edge Cafe on the first, there's the Balbrook Enterprise Centre. There's a cafe that's gone in there. It was a little bit of coincidence. I think their planning was in place before the Greenway came along, and then the Greenway was almost finished and they were about to open, and it was just a perfect kind of match. And you get a lot of people now. They've commented on the footfall that's brought a lot of extra business, and they have a nice little outdoor area right beside the Greenway and that, so it's quite visible. And we hope to link right where that cafe is. We're hoping to link in another active travel project that will bring you up to Tala Village. So there's a lot of nice links that are happening from the Greenway. So it's almost like the spine from the Dublin Mountains into the city centre. But there will be a lot of nice, from this, we hope to see a lot of nice links to different areas.
Yeah, I mean, what are we talking in kilometres / miles from roughly?
I think it's 17 in total, 14 of it is in South
Dublin.
We
won't quote you on that, but you know.
So I should really know these answers. So 3 kilometres is in Dublin City Council, and then the rest is in South Dublin County Council. So it kind of crosses the county boundaries.
Yeah. So that'd be great for, you know, like hardened cyclists, you know, that just want to go out and get a bit of fresh air and not be breathing in all the pollution from the city.
Absolutely, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your own background. I mean, how did you even get involved in something like this? Were you approached?
No, I wasn't. No. It was something I'd always thought about. There was somebody I used to work with, a female engineer, and she'd moved over to a local authority, and I met up with her a couple of times afterwards, and she said that it was a really positive decision for her. And I think when I came to the stage in my life that she was at the time, she'd had some young kids. In about 2011, 2012, a friend of mine had started up an engineering firm. It was very much in its infancy, and after about a year or so he asked me to come on board with him, and I jumped at the chance, and it was a very romantic idea. And at the time I didn't realise just how much work is involved in trying to, you know, secure business for a startup and secure repeat business, and the stress of starting to grow and take on new people and new employees, and the hours just got, and the workload just got a little bit crazy. And then what I find with most consulting engineering firms is that you're asked to do something an awful lot quicker. So that's as a structural engineer, that's where the stress starts to come in. So because you'd be lying in bed at night going, God, did I check this or did I check that? And I had to do that in an hour, and it normally would take me an hour and a half. And that's when you kind of, whereas when you move over to, say, the local authority, it's not about cost, it's not about profit, it's about doing it right. Doing the right job for everybody. And it's not always about the quickest and the cheapest. It's about what is the best quality, or a balance between quality and value for money. And I really like that. I really like the idea of working on capital projects and having an impact on the community. I'd be very much interested in that side of it. And then having young kids as well.
Yeah.
When you need to switch off, you need to switch off and give them the time and attention that they deserve.
Yeah. Well, it's not something small for your CV. Do you know what I mean? Having this on your I'm the project manager of this, the Dodder Greenway. People are probably kind of going to be like, oh my God, this is like a major, big props to yourself for getting this done.
But it's very enjoyable. Like, what I found on the project, and something that I just really, really enjoy, is the multidiscipline nature of it. Like, so you're working with arborists, you're responsible for making sure that the trees are all right, you're working with the ecologists who have, you know, would have concerns on the wildlife in the area, and that's the way it should be. My view is that there's still, because somebody should be responsible for that.
Mm.
So say, for example, national parks and wildlife, like they're responsible for the conservation of protected species in Ireland. So on the Dodder Greenway, it's a feeding corridor for bats. I know bats probably aren't the most popular mammals at the minute, but they are protected under the Habitats Directive. So we'd be in a lot of trouble with Europe if something happened to bats. So we've had to be conscious of that. So you're looking to balance the, you know, the landscaping, it's to be very nice, but it's not to cost a bomb because you're also responsible for safety. So, you know, there's a lot of, I suppose, balls in the air, and you're trying to make sure that you keep an eye on all the areas that need to be addressed. So that's something that I found to be very enjoyable. I enjoy learning about trees. I've a bit of a hippie in me somewhere. And as well about, you know, you get some questions in from the community about, oh, I spotted this badger, and is that badger going to be all right? Are you cutting off the feeding corridor for the badgers and stuff? And then we can just refer to the ecologist, and they'll come back and say, yes, we've surveyed the badgers, and these are urban badgers, and they're used to streetlights and things like that. And the same with whether it's foxes or bats or rabbits or whatever it is that you can find on areas like this of good, rich ecology, which is what we want to see. And we want to bring people to show them these things. So along the Dodder, we've got a couple of signs for places of interest. So one historic place of interest would be the Weir, for example. And there's great wildlife around the Weir. So we hope to educate people and get them to take a stop here, sit down, have a look at the Weir. Yeah. And we'll explain to you a little bit. If you want to learn a little bit about the wildlife in the area, here's a sign to explain what's going on, if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. So if you want to see bats and badgers, get yourself down to the Dodger Greenway. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in to see us today, Ronan. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
No problem, Paula. Thanks very much.
Europe in My Backyard is financed by the Department for Regional and Urban Policy through the European Commission.
Europe in My Backyard.
L'Europa in casa nostra.
Europa in mi casa.
Un'inchiesta radiofonica sulla politica di coesione europea.
Radijsko poručanje o evropski kohezijski politiki.
Europe in My Backyard.
Radio reporting.
Un'inchiesta.
Radio reportage.
Un espacio radiofonico sobre la politica europea de cohesión.
Os europei kohezijos politika njomavam.
Radio Reporting.
Radio Reportagen
on European Cohesion Policy.
Über die europäische Kohäsionspolitik.